You're listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas.
Welcome back to another edition of The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. And I am, of course, Joe R. Lucas, the host of the show. And after five seasons of The Crossover, we still come up with surprises. Today is another special show for me because even though I love talking to these fantastic players and all these intelligent coaches that the EuroLeague has to offer, I like to step outside the box and bring someone in that sees the game from a different focal point. Someone that is seldom appreciated or congratulated and often criticized and doesn't have the opportunity to raise a trophy at the end of the season or take home a title. And if you guessed that I have a referee on the show today, you're correct. But not just any referee. We have the referee. Had to get him out of retirement for this one. But please welcome to The Crossover, Luigi LaMonica. My man, welcome. How are you, sir?
I'm fine. Thank you. Thank you for the invitation.
You know, to me, it's always nice to like interview someone that's my age.
Yes, because always, I understand that more of your guests are players, so they are young.
Yeah, we get the coaches every now and then, but it makes me crazy that most of the coaches are even younger than me. So that even makes it feel worse. Yeah. How's retirement going for you? Congratulations on an incredible career. And how's retirement?
Thank you. Okay, I retired to run up and down the court, but as you know, I'm working now with Federation and in the referee department, and there is a lot of work to do. So I'm full active with this at this moment. We are coming back from the final eight in Torino, where it was unbelievable organization, almost sold out semifinal, and the final was sold out completely.
Right.
Torino is probably the best gym in Italy, one of the newest one, and it was very nice atmosphere in the arena.
What, one day if we'll ever get together, I'll tell you my story about Torino when I played in Caserta. Is a very interesting story about what happened to me during the game, but
yeah, why not now?
No.
It's something private there.
No, it's not private. It's embarrassing. It's a little bit. I tried to jump in the timeout. I tried to remember the old days. They had the wooden advertisements. You know, the really thin pieces of wood. I tried to jump over it at the timeout, and my foot caught the top of it, and I fell down, and the whole fan just started like laughing at me.
You would like it to wear injury. Can you imagine the opposite, you wearing cassette to people? Oh.
Yeah, but I mean, at that time, those were my people at that time, you know?
Yeah, okay.
You know, I have one question I always have like one that I want to start with before I get into the actual, you know, your whole career and everything. And this is something I think that'll come up throughout our discussion. I'm an ex-player, and I'm not a true fan of any team. Either, you know, some people would think that differently. I'm not a true fan. I watch the game from a different perspective. And if I'm not working the game, if I'm not actually commentating the game, it's strange, but it's really true. I don't enjoy watching them. It makes me nervous because I'm watching it from a ex-player's perspective, or I'm watching it from a, you know, I'm thinking about everything that the people are doing wrong or right or whatever. So I don't really enjoy the match itself. Is that the same for a referee after you, like when you're not actually doing a game, you're watching the game sitting down? Are you critiquing everything that's going on? Is it like, oh, Lord, he made that call. Wait till he sees the video tomorrow. Or do you actually enjoy the sport?
No, really. This is something difficult to explain, but you know, we are working on our mistakes mainly. So we improve when we study from our mistake. I mean, from personal mistake. So when I became a professional referee, I understood that was faster if I analyze also the mistakes of my colleagues. So every time I went to watch a game live, I watched the game like with the referee eyes.
Right.
Most of the time, I don't know what is the result of the game. I don't know what's going on. But just I was focused on the referees, And when they make mistakes, because everybody knows we make a lot of mistakes in the game. Some are very important, some are small details, but for us are mistakes.
Right.
And I always try to analyze why they did the mistake. Because I found out that this is one way to improve ourselves. I mean, mm-hmm. when we are out. And I always be grateful to my colleagues, because when they make mistakes, probably they were the mind mistakes in the future games.
Right.
And this is something that I always suggest to the young guys. I mean, from now on, you don't go to the game like fans or like hooligans or like something like this. Go there like a referee and try to analyze the reason why your colleagues on the court made mistakes. For example, if I go to watch the game behind one basket, because right. this is the position
referee,
where
yeah.
that referee that we call lead official is the guy that is more involved in our game in Europe. I mean, and if you are behind him, you can see the same thing that he is watching now.
Right.
So it's just matter of I will try to study the mistakes from him and try to find out why he did mistakes. It was, for example, out of position. He was concentrating on other things. His eyes were not watching the right place. And from this, I try to avoid my to improve my job on the court.
So basically, you don't enjoy the game as much as like a normal fan does.
when they officiate very well, yes, I enjoy it. I cheer for them.
Hey, you know, I always thought like I was inconsistent with referees when I played. You know, I would, you know, if you knew a referee or if you saw the way they were calling them, you either like kind of suck up to them and say, "Oh, hey, great call, man. You know, you got me." You know, other times you get upset, you know, but is there any time like I would always expect the referee to turn around and look at me like, "Hey, man, when the teams don't call you anymore and you can't play this game anymore, why don't you put this whistle in your mouth and try to do this for a living?" Because there's only one ex-player that I know that became a referee. It was a guy who played in Spain a while ago in NBA. His name is Leon Wood.
He played also in Italy.
He played in Italy also, yeah.
And now there is another one that, okay, probably you don't know, but his name is Nate Green.
Okay,
and
yeah.
He played in Avellino, for example, in Fortitudo, and in Milan, and in Venice. And when I went to the Summer League in Las Vegas, mm-hmm. he was already second year in G League, and now he got the contract 2 years ago, he got the contract for NBA, and he was... Very good referee. Very good referee, I have to say. Yes, he is a very good referee. He is a good referee.
It has to be a difficult transition because we see the game differently as a player. You know, it's not easy.
This is my idea. I think that we have now big problem with to find the new referees. Okay,
mm-hmm.
In Italy, we were focused to take very young with very young kids. I mean, 15, 14 years old. And, you know, we spend a lot of efforts, a lot of money to keep them in the family. But, you know, they are too young. And it's most of them, they don't know really our rules, because our rules are very complicated.
Right.
And now they are changing so often that it's for one guy that is, you know, he makes... He's referee just for fun, just to have some pocket money to go outside in the weekend.
Right.
It's very difficult to let them understand how important are the rules for us. But most of the rules that we have is interpretation from a real game. I mean, for one player, it's very easy to understand when we talk about pivot foot or when we talk about verticality. When we talk about legal guarding position, to teach these things to our referee, to our kids, we took a lot of times. Sometimes 4 or 5 years. With the players, it's very easy.
Yeah.
And now that we have most of the main competition, they have three person officiating. So the position on the court of the referee, it's very important. It's fundamental. So for one player or former player, it's very easy to understand this concept, because right. they know perfectly probably how many system you have in the team. Now 30, 35, 40, the book for the scheme is like this, for example. Right. So they understand immediately.
Positioning is one thing, though. Then making calls is a whole different thing.
but it's a good start. Right. I mean, if you are in good position, you can have a good call. If you are in bad position, it's 50-50. So it's black or white. It's right or wrong.
You started this career, though, at 13, which is, you know, unexpected from what I've read. You were playing a game, the referee didn't show up, and then all of a sudden, it was up to you to referee.
My father was one of the on the board of this team. It's with the team where I played, and they forgot to ask for the referees to the local federation. So when I left the game, and they said, "Oh, but we didn't the referee. We didn't call the referee." And so my father came to me, gave me the whistle, say, "Hey, go."
Luigi, let me just say something. I hope I'm not saying anything bad, but you know. Like, if you were a good player at that time, I don't think your father would have given you the referee. Is that the whistle?
No, the story is another one, they said, because my brother was a good player. Okay?
Right, exactly. That's so, that was my question. I'm like, why didn't your brother get the referee or get the whistle? Yeah.
Because I was probably weaker than you. So, and the second day came, the responsible of the referee, and he saw me and said, "What was how many names you officiated?" He said, "Oh, no." He said, "It was the first one." He said, "Oh, why we start the new school in October? If you want to come," I said, "Okay, I will come." And then from there, starting something amazing for me.
Yeah, that's an amazing career that you've had. But you know what you were just talking about with the young kids coming up and how hard it is to get these people into the family. And to get them to understand. I mean, when I look at a little bit of your career that I've looked at here, your official refereeing career started in 1980 with lower divisions, according yes. to our stats, in Italy. Until 1993, you didn't really get promoted to the Italian top flight. That's 13 years. In 1997, I think, was your first international experience.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. And you got your license in 96. So we're talking about 16 years between, maybe you know what you wanted to do during that time because you wanted to referee and you were patient, but people aren't patient anymore. You know, we got Google, we have the internet, and, you know, everybody wants something tomorrow. How does a young 22, 23, 24-year-old kid that puts this whistle in his mouth try to, is there a faster career path nowadays than it was in the 1980s?
At the beginning, really, I loved to officiate. I mean, I was full concentrate in officiating. And I was, as you said, I was very young. Right. And for example, officiating at the first regional level, where the player are probably 35 years old or 40 sometimes.
And that's even worse, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, it's even worse. It's even worse, but when at the end of the game, most of the game, they came to me and say, "Oh, congratulations, you are young, but you are very good athlete." So they give me the power to continue. And yes, it's true. I had one long period, I mean, 5 or 6 years, I remember 5 probably, where I was in B division. And that was the crucial moment. Because then at the end, especially the last 2 or 3 years, it was like a personal challenging. So I said, why I will not reach the better the division? I mean, why I'm not going in A2? And it was, you know, was like a challenge between me and the officiating. And but I have to say that that 5 years, I think, were the most important for my careers, because for 5 years I had very good teammate. I mean, because I was young, because I was still young at the time. My crew chief was one experienced referee always. And, you know, at the end of the season, we have a ranking. And the ranking says, okay, we took this year 5 and there was 6 or 7. So when started the new season, I started at the top of the ranking. So the best game were for me and my experienced referee, experienced colleague.
How hard is that? Because, you know, like I said, it was 17 years. And I mean, in my mind, I'm not a quitter. And I think a lot of people who succeeded in life aren't quitters. But you do think about quitting at some point. Did you get to the point where you're like, man, this is just taking too long for me. I need something quicker. You know, I need to make this a living.
Okay, I understand. Oh, for in my case, I was lucky because I stuck very young. So I mean, even lose 2 or 3 years was not important.
Right.
But now I will try to translate in English what was my ideas or my thoughts in that moment. I said, I enjoy so much to officiating that until the kick in my ass is not so painful, I will continue. And yes, I continue because I love to officiating. Because there are so many things around the officiating. I mean, it's not only the 40 minutes of the game. For example, I started in 78, 79, and my first time ever that I take train, it was because I have a game in one city far away from my city. Right. The first time that I took one ferry boat was because officiating. It was in Venice. And the same time for the plane. Right. The first time because, and I met so incredible friends and people during this long career that for me it was so normal to go on the weekend to officiating. So they could do everything to me, okay? Probably even if they give me the chance to officiate in first division in Italy, but probably because I was so happy to make this jump, I could stay even in second or third division, no problem at all.
When did you officially start the EuroLeague? And do you remember what year?
Yes, it was the second year. It was 2001 or 2.
2001.
1, 2, yes. Because, you know, the first season was this to Super League and EuroLeague. And they chose a group of referees that they couldn't officiate in the national competition. And they took some referees in some countries. And when they signed the first agreement with FIBA, I immediately jumped to EuroLeague.
That was after you had the international license to referee.
Yeah, yes.
The thing that always confuses me or I think about is because obviously your career is a little bit longer than a basketball player's career because of the physical aspect of it, but there's a mental aspect for you guys also. And you just retired at 56. I read it, you know, you felt like, you know, it was just time to go. Things were like a little bit different. But when is, let's say I'm a 20-year-old kid in Italy and I want to become a referee. I've dedicated my life to being a referee. Not too many 20-year-old kids dedicate their life to anything anymore, unfortunately. But
yeah, this is the main problem.
Yeah, this is the problem. But by what age does that person have to like be at the first level of Italy or be approaching the EuroLeague or if you sign for EuroLeague, you obviously do Euro Cup games also, no?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
So is there an age limit where you say, okay, well, you know, I can't be fighting for EuroLeague anymore because now they're not going to accept me, or the time that I'll be here?
No.
You understand what I mean? Is
I understand. I understand what you say, and it's. I don't think that there is a magic age. Mm-hmm. I mean, not everybody has the same background. Not everybody coming from the same countries. For example, we had some example from guys that came from Lithuania, for example, or from Lazio, where basketball, it's, you know, it's like a religion.
Right, exactly.
And everybody play basketball. So mainly it's like for us football or soccer, for example, no?
No,
so,
I don't know why. I've been in Europe long enough to know football. Don't worry.
Okay, in football. So in Italy, we have people that are playing in the street. In my age, we play on the street football. So we knew all the rules. So the same for people that are, for example, from Lithuania or from Latvia or from other country where basketball is very, you know, or Serbia, for example. So these guys, they are able to arrive in FIBA or in EuroLeague at 25 years, and they are immediately boom, they are good. We cannot say which is the right age, because also it's coming from how many good basketball games you had on the shoulder.
When you say good game, you mean a big game, like between teams with a lot of pressure on you, or do you mean like they refereed a good game?
It's yes, with pressure, but also basketball good game. When you can see players that are faster,
right?
For example, and this is my experience always when I met some young guy in the for example in the past in EuroCup, for example, many times we officiate with young guy, and this guy, we after 1 or 2 years in EuroCup, if they really want to become better referee, they have the chance, because EuroCup, it's much better competition than most of the first division game in most of the European country. When you play with a better player, you improve. When you officiate with the best player, you officiate as well. So, and you improve your career. So it's a little bit complicated process. But for sure, when you are national referee, first division, and you jump international referee, and then you have the chance to improve, because the basketball that you are start to officiate in is better than before. And they force you to improve. And also we have to say that now the for sure the best program for teaching is for the big organization. They have, for example, we received the day after the clips of the game, we received, this is the new moda for the offensive team, this is the new model for the defensive team. Now they start to play defense, pick a role in different with different things. It's normal that if higher is the level, and we have more possibility to improve.
You're pretty much a scout now for the referees, right? You're pretty much like the head of the referee department, and you go around and you watch referees and you critique them, and you have your eye on everybody. Like if I go see a player, you know, I look at certain things, you know, how they warm up, their you know, what they look like, their physicality. I always like to look at like players' hands, their footwork, you know, things like that. Are there things that you as a ex-referee now, two or three things that are important? Are there some referees where you look at like, oh man, you know, like, I'll give you a player example. When I saw Luka Doncic at 15, I was like, oh man, this kid's, you know.
But I'm sorry. Even I could do it the same for you, because everybody knew about him, because
of course.
He was great. At 17, he was completely.
But I mean that was the only example that I could actually come up with where like is there a referee where you just like, you know, you like, wow, you know, this guy's got everything. What are the three most important things I'm trying to say? Like what do you look at? I know you talked about positioning and the verticality and everything else, but what are the things that you like, this guy has it or this girl has it? Because now I love the fact that we have female referees also, because they're really good.
Absolutely. It's you know, the first thing that always I try to when we talk about it's okay, now the job that I'm doing now, I need a lot of people that help me. Okay, so now we are looking for a referee that are okay in Italy, we say allenabili. So it means people that receive the information, and after 2 weeks they can adjust their officiating. I mean, okay, we are talking and say, listen, you have to move like this and you have to do this. Okay? And this guy, the week later, I will call the observer that is going to watch the game. Say, listen, 2 weeks ago, I told to Joe that he has to do this movement and he has to call these things, because it's when his center position, it's too high. okay? And we need the center position close to the basket. And if this guy apply this suggestion, I think this is the one guy that we can work on him, okay? This is the first thing. The second thing is how we approach the players and the coaches. You know, we have a big problem now that, as you said, the young, especially the young referee, looks like that under pressure, they become arrogant.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Because we have the whistle, we have the power.
Yeah.
But most of the time, you can manage the situation without technical foul or without the call. We can talk with the players. We can talk with the coaches. For sure, we cannot make a political speech, but we can give them some boom, boom, bam, like this. And when you see that one referee under pressure is able to talk with the players, is able to talk with the coaches, give short informations, give short answer, this is another quality. And the other one, it's for sure, you have to be honest. I mean, right. Honest not doesn't mean only honest. It means that you have to understand that at top of the top, there is the game. And you have to give respect to the game, because we have to always thinking that the fans comes for the game. They don't right. comes for to watch referee calling 100 fouls or call 10 technical fouls.
That's some fans. Other fans go. We won't talk about places and so some of them go just for the referees.
Okay. But this is part of the game, you know.
The psychological part of it has to be, I think, one of the most difficult parts. And as you're saying, you know, I think like if we go back to the Luka Doncic comparison, if you have a person that can make a bad call and come back and be a better referee and make up for his mistakes quickly, but man, there has to be like some sort of psychological thing too. If you made various bad calls, you know, like a basketball player or a golfer like trying to putt, you know, like they miss a big putt in a major championship and then all of a sudden they say they get the yips. I don't know if you know what that means, but. It's like a guy who misses a couple foul shots and then all of a sudden he can't make the foul shots anymore. Does this happen to a referee? Is there a psychological aspect that could break down a person's career?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. We have to be very, you know, strong. I mean, because we know that it's impossible to have a game without mistakes.
Right.
And this is part of the game. And this is also part of our long way to become a better referee.
Right.
So when we make a mistake, we have to be strong to understand that everybody can make a mistake. And also the referee have to the rights to make a mistake. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that, for example, in the last 2 minutes of the game, this is the unwritten rule, we have to be perfect. Okay? But sometimes happen that we call a stupid foul, or we don't see something, or
right.
You know, we before without this technology that we have now, the distant replay system, where stop lamp, for example, that helped a lot. How many times? And also, I did mistake, and I count the basket, and then went on. I said, "Oh no, it was goal, was body basket."
Right.
And then you cannot do anything, just to suffer from this. And we have to understand that, we have to learn from our mistakes. And we have to understand why we did mistakes, because probably we were too focused on the ball and we didn't focus on the block. Or we were not ready to receive the sound of the buzzer. And we received the buzzer and we were shocked about this.
Right.
And we were not ready. Okay, now with the instant replay, it's not this problem. The problem, we can't see this problem. We solve this situation. But for example, for the foul, how many times we have, and you know, we with our position, the court, 2 meters from one side on the other side, make completely different the angle and make completely different the view that we get. And how many times we are sure 100% that we call the foul, and then when the day after when we watch the game, because we have to do it, and you see, and the camera is on the other angle. I said, oh no, he didn't touch it at all. But because, you know, sometimes happen. How many times happen? So we have to be all. And probably this foul was the fifth foul of the players.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
He is out. And probably he's the best player of the team. Yeah. Or like happened to me last season, he was the MVP of the season. Or one of the top MVP of the season. So, and then they say, okay, I did this stupid call and I don't want to do in the same position next time. So I have to find out why I did this call.
What's more difficult when you look at the video is it the call, the bad call that you made, or is it the one that you might have missed and you didn't make? What's harder to like to live with? You know, I mean, you someone could get fouled going to the basket at the end of the game and you didn't make the call.
No, I think that for a referee to make one fantasy call, it's worse.
It's worse,
because
huh?
In this situation, nobody can help you. Nobody can help you.
Yeah.
For example, you miss a call, one of your teammates, he can help you.
Okay? True.
If you have a very strong team and we know each other and can be. But if you blow the whistle and it's a fantasy call, nobody can help you.
Mm.
And this is also something that we always repeat in the pregame conference with our teammates. It's better to, if you are not sure, don't blow the whistle.
Don't blow the whistle.
One time we were only two on the court. Now we are three.
Right.
And most of the time, there is one that has the open angle and the right angle. So why we have, we prefer, I, this is my philosophy. We have, if you blow the whistle, it's 50-50. Okay? And we are three. One of us probably has 90%. So I prefer that equal this kind of contact if there is a foul. So the first thing is, if you don't see, don't blow the whistle. Because if you don't see and you blow the whistle, it's 50-50.
Yeah, I'm 57. I'm not much of a social media guy. I do my things on social media just because I kind of have to. But yeah, I ask this a lot of the players. Like if I played this game now, it'd be so difficult for me to wake up in the morning and see like Instagram and the Twitter and all the comments and the messages. Do you guys ignore that? Do you deal with it? Is it something that because that could psychologically affect somebody also?
I think that this is from our generation. I don't have Instagram. I don't go because what I really need that. I really need something that it's honest, like we are honest.
Right.
Because if you are fans, probably most of the time you are not honest. And most of the time, even when they see the video, they don't have the, how to say, they are not, they don't accept this. Mm. And it's very easy to write on the phone. It's very easy now.
Right.
Usually, I don't have any contact with. And also, I suggest to the young guy to don't go through this because sometimes can be very 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 hard to read some comments.
You know what's interesting to me is as an ex-player and when I played, and now I look at things so much differently, you know, from a more open viewpoint. The other day, I'll give you an example. I don't know if you saw this or not, the final of the, I think it was the championship game, or no, there's the semifinal game between two teams in Spain. I think it was Tenerife and Barcelona. And they were playing in Barcelona. Barcelona was down by one with 3 seconds left. The guy goes to the basket wide open. Another guy comes out of nowhere and blocks his shot on the buzzer. One of the most amazing end of the game plays I've ever seen that didn't score a basket. And you know the referees didn't call a foul and nobody talks about it. That's the thing that gets to you, you know? Nobody talks about the fact that even when they went back and watched the replay, they didn't watch the replay to determine or not. This, the TV was showing the replay. It was a beautiful block, but nobody was sitting there saying, okay, great job, referees, for not calling that foul.
Can you imagine if it was a call?
Yeah.
And it was wrong. Can
and,
you imagine?
And they make two free throws.
But Joe, this is our life. I remember in one Eurobasket, the game was a quarterfinal, was Lithuania against Fyrom. Okay. Can you imagine we played that game in Vilnius, if I remember well. And it was, I think, one point for Fyrom. It was 5 seconds at the end of the game. The most important decision of the game was made by Fernando Roca, that at that time was very young referee, young referee. And he didn't blow anything on one situation very close to this. And it was Jasikevičius, I think, or Kaukenas, one, two, or three. And it was a block. And as you said, nobody say anything about this. Right. No one. But it was the best decision of the entire championship.
Right.
This is our life. We know. We are there for this reason, because we want that the basketball at the end will win the game. This is the most important thing for the club.
What type of preparation do you have to have for a certain game? And because you don't have time to prepare either.
Sometimes not, because sometimes we have one game Tuesday and one game Thursday, and then we have a long trip on the middle. Right. So what usually we do is, for sure, we have to practice. I mean, because even now we are running. I think that the referee has to be athletes anyway. Because especially for when you are not able to practice because the games, because the trips, you have to be prepared before. I mean, when we started the season in October, I mean, you have to start in August if you are young, or in July if you are 50, or if you are 55 in June. So and to put the gasoline in the body.
Yeah.
Because we'll arrive the moment that you have no time to go to the practice, because there are games, you are tired, and you know, if you continue to practice when you are tired, injury are behind the door, we say. What we do, it's for sure we have to also study the teams. I mean, we have to check, we have to know if there are left-hand players, how they love to play, if they play run and gun, if they have tall guys, if they play hard defense. So we have to know everything.
That amazes me that you guys actually scout the teams and the players also.
We scout the teams, yes. We scout the teams, and we have to know if they are very good on 3 points, if they are strong defense, if they prefer to give the ball in post play.
Right.
There are some teams in EuroLeague that they have three centers, and other teams they don't have anything. So they play different basketball, and we have to understand this, because we cannot go to the game without be ready and prepare. To do this, we have to watch the game like the assistant coach, make the same job for the head coach and then transfer to the players. This is something that we have to do it.
So do you have, like, when you get your schedule for the week or for the month or whatever, and you go into, let's say, Olympiacos and Monaco, and you're going to be doing it in Greece, and you know who you're refereeing with, are you in touch with those people before you go there, or you just meet there
Immediately. No. Immediately.
Really?
Immediately, and we fix immediately our travel plan. Mm-hmm. In such a way, we try to arrive at the same moment. We have dinner together, and we decide the time of the meeting. It usually it's game day in the morning after breakfast. We want to prepare the game, and we want to arrive ready for the game in the evening. This is something that we have to do. This is something that everybody. Everybody does like this. It's like you're going to make the shot in the morning, and we talk about it in the morning as well.
You know, to me as an ex-player, just it's so interesting to listen to it. I hope that the people that are listening to the show can realize how much work is actually put in, because there's so much work that you're just explaining to me that you guys put in Because remember, as we said prior to this, there's three games in 1 week. So you have to be, you're preparing yourself a couple of weeks ahead of time, also talking to everybody else, getting together and doing it. And is it usually the crew chief that does that?
Usually, yes. And, you know, for example, the crew chief is covering if there is the injury list from the teams, if they sign a new player, if they release one player. So we have to be ready for every circumstances, because the and then also we work in one very competitive world, and you know, the European coaches, they can fix something new every week,
right?
Every week. So we have to check the game. Sometimes we check also the game two games before. If we have time, this is professional work, and we have to work like professional.
What's the, go back to the schedule thing again? What's the feeling? And this is gonna kind of like open up a big can of worms possibly. But what's the feeling when you? I'm just gonna give a couple of examples. When you get your schedule and you see Madrid Barcelona Clásico on February 13th, you're like, oh God, or Olympiacos Panathinaikos. are you happy about that? Or
In the same week?
No,
for sure, to have this game, it's, you know, it's the adrenaline, it's growing up every day. So when arrive the day of the game, you are very concentrated. But I have to say something, that when you have this kind of nomination, it's very easy to jump in the game, to go to the game, because, you know, the fans are pushing you, the atmosphere pushing you. So it's very easy to be concentrated, very easy. But for sure, it's when you receive this nomination, it's, you know, for everybody, it's a big honor.
Do you get nervous? Is there that, like, yes, that nervous energy the before games? Like, in your last game, I believe, was the championship game, no? In Belgrade.
Yes.
Last season.
Yeah.
I mean, but you...
That one was a little bit different.
That's
was
special, a little bit different. Of course, yeah. Because you knew it was your last game. But does that nervous energy... I mean, a referee has to be nervous when he goes out to do a game. You know, it's... I mean, everybody said, like... Players, do you guys get nervous? Like, yeah, if you're not nervous, there's something wrong with you. You know, I mean, I was always nervous before a big game.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think that if you are not nervous, it's time to go. Because it means that something was broken inside us. What really, you talk about the last game, that I was nervous as the first Final Four that I had.
Yeah.
So, you know, because I really wanted to officiate very well the last game. I mean, I was so afraid to make one mistake in my last game, and said, no, I don't want to live this. I don't want to live it this way.
Because then you think you might have to come back next year to do one more full season because of one bad call.
Yes. Yeah.
Luigi, where's the place you don't want to go?
No, there is no place where I don't want to go. There are places where I prefer to go to officiate. One is Tel Aviv. I mean, Tel Aviv is something amazing, because all this yellow fans, the atmosphere is great. Another one is Kaunas now, because it's the gym. It's, as I told you before, basketball there is a religion. And the other one, it's Pioneer. I mean, Pioneer was very dangerous,
right?
But it's so adrenaline court that it's impossible to describe. It's impossible to describe.
What EuroLeague game do you remember the most? Other than, I'm sure, your final one last year.
Okay, it's the final in Athens, 2007. Panathinaikos CSKA, and the final in Istanbul.
That was the parentheses, Olympiakos.
Yes.
I mean, do you know the score?
Yes, we have to know, because
you do.
There are some we have to, especially at the end of the game, because, for example, if the defensive team is leading by 3 points,
mm-hmm.
and for sure they will try to make foul because they don't want to receive the 3-point shot. And we have to be ready. We have to be ready. We have to be focused because we want to call the first foul. We don't want to call the second one that probably would be also a sportsmanlike foul. Or if they want to stop the clock, we want to stop the clock when they make foul and not the second one. Because probably it's 1 second or 1.5 seconds later. And we don't want to give any advantage to anyone. So we have to know. So in that situation, we knew exactly what was the score.
First of all, I want to say that as an ex-player, again, that amazes me because I've never really analyzed it to that point. Maybe the three of you get together and talk during the timeout and you say, look, they're up three. They're probably going to foul. Let's make sure we make the right call so there's not a unsportsmanlike foul, which is to me is amazing. I don't know if the people are listening feel the same way I am, but I think that's awesome. But there are times where that first intention to make the foul, there's not contact or whatever. So I mean, you also have to be able to make sure that the foul is called in the right manner.
Absolutely, we have to be able to make the judgment because many times, for sure, the other team, the opponent's team, they want to avoid to take a foul. They want to go to the 3 points.
Right.
So we in the especially in the last 2 minutes, every timeout it's full of information that we have to receive from our teammates and to give to our teammates. For example, about the score, about which kind of inbound they will make. If they will make a long pass, or if they will make a long pass, we will make this. If they don't make this, we will squeeze the triangle and we stay with the ball because we want to follow the ball. We don't need to have, for example, three referees or one referee is on the baseline where is the inbound and the other referee is on the other headline.
Mm-hmm.
Because probably nobody will be in the restricted area. All the players will be in the one half of the court. And so we want to squeeze the triangle. And if there is a long pass, we have to run. So we have all these kind of conversations during the timeout. And we have to be focused and we have to understand. We have to know if, for example, from the team, arrive from the bench, one player that is only one foul, he's the guy that will make the foul. This is clear, no? So we have to understand, to really analyze a lot of details during the last 2 minutes.
Man, I'm literally fascinated by this conversation we're having. You know, it's a conversation I've never had with other referees, and I'm so glad that we're doing this because now, you know, what you've done by just explaining that part of the game, you've made me realize how important it really is to have some experience in the game of basketball. And it, you know, if you've never really been part of it and played it, then you don't understand those situations at the end of the game. You know, when it's a 3-point lead and this guy has to do this or this guy's there. So it's all like comes back around. I think that's fascinating as far as being able to listen. And I'm glad I don't play anymore because I would hate to respect you guys even more than I do now. Because when I played, I didn't respect you guys that much, obviously, like most players.
Because I was not a referee.
Yeah, of course. And you know, I think that if players could sit down and listen to that, you know, and understand exactly what you guys do, it may be a little bit different, let's say, the reaction of players and coaches. But you know, when you're in the heat of the moment, you're not concerned about how long the crew chief talked to the referees before the game or with a minute left. You know, it doesn't matter to.
Oh no, totally agree with you. Yeah, for sure. It's but I think that also we have to change a little bit our our philosophy. We have to talk with the players, with the coaches, with the journalists, for example, because most of the team that we are doing, it's nobody knows. Nobody knows about what we are doing during the game, what we are talking about during the game. Most of the people thinking that we are selecting the the restaurant for the after the game.
You already told us that the restaurants were already determined the week before you even, well, yeah, when you got the schedule, you already knew where you're going out to eat that night.
This is also a duty of
the crew chief,
you know, of the experienced referees.
Exactly. You mentioned, and I didn't get into it too much because I think it was an obvious question. You mentioned how much the game changed with three referees. It became not easier to referee because I think there was an adjustment period when it went from two to three referees for you guys. It had to be because now people are covering less court, but they have more responsibility. But what about the technology now between the you know, coaches' challenges, the out of bounds calls, the instant replay? Is it easier? Is it more pressure? Because you could really make a big mistake, and it's more magnified than it ever has been before.
Okay, for sure the technology helps a lot. Can you imagine the decision in the last shot of the game? Yeah. So we are relaxed because we know that at the end we can go there and we can get all the information that we need to take the right decision. So right. We can stay more focused on the game. I mean, for example, if there is a 3-point shot, we can stay with the shooter until he touch the floor again. Before right. We have to watch a lot of the text. So for sure the technology help our job a lot, but also now we have to understand that this is something that can help the referees, but they cannot change it.
Right.
I mean, we cannot have a basketball game only with the instant replay. We can't.
Yeah.
We have situation with this instant replay. We have a lot of situation. Okay, but we cannot add more and more because then the games will become not interesting for the people. The people they want to have the right decision, but they don't want to stop the game, especially in Europe. In Europe, they want to see the player play the game. They don't want to see the referee that are always in front of the monitors to check their calls. And we know about this. And we know that when we go to the instant replay, we have to be as faster as possible. But from the other side, we want to be faster, but we do want also to be right. Yeah. So we have to find the balance. But for sure, this was a big improvement for officiating.
One of my questions that I've thought of from the beginning of this would be, the mistakes that you've made over time. I mean, as a player, as an ex-player, I always tell everybody, I remember the bad games much more than I remember the good games. I remember the games we lost much more than the games we won. And is there any game in particular or any call you made in a game where you go back, you're like, oh my God, it's still like, sometimes I close my eyes at night and I still remember that game or that moment.
Yeah, it's happened last year. I told you before, it happened last year, and I called the fifth foul on Larkin in FS in Anadolu Barcelona, and I was sure about this call because for my position, I was sure, I have to say.
Right.
And from his reaction, I understood that probably something is wrong. And then when I went to the locker room, and the referee coach was Richard, and Richard was exactly behind me, and he didn't say anything about this. And because Richard he didn't know about my retirement in Belgrade, he learned after the game. Okay, I didn't say anything to him. And he told me, Luigi, when did you decide? I decided in March, but it was a long process because especially this season with the COVID, with some games that were not played with COVID at that moment, and then it was postponed. And because the nomination, I couldn't officiate, for example, Monaco because I had game before Monaco, so it was a long story. And then the award, in that set of nomination, I had four games with the Russian team. So practically for 4 weeks, I didn't officiate.
Right.
And before, right before I had this game, and I started to think about it and said, probably, because then I saw the game, and I saw that it was completely, can say bullshit goal? Yes, I can say.
Of course
it
you can say it.
It was absolutely disaster. I start to say, probably it's the moment it's arrived. Because it was so obvious it was not foul.
Yeah.
Okay? Something was inside me was broken. Okay? And that's probably I start to lose something. And he told me, Luigi, I have to be honest with you. I was behind you. And when you make the call, I didn't say anything because, okay, could be. And then when I saw the replay, I said, what is this?
Yeah.
And from that moment, I also start to think about this. And every game that we did after the game, I called the referee coach. And I always ask it, how was Luigi? He had the fantasy call? And everybody said, no. So I said, he said, can happen. Yeah, I understand it can happen, but not in that way.
Yeah.
That game was, as you said, the night I couldn't sleep because I said, how was possible?
Yeah.
Because always the same thing. If you don't see, don't blow the whistle. If you don't see, don't blow the whistle. But I saw something. And this is something that was working in my brain.
In those moments, Luigi, this is another question that I've always had, and I've always thought about it, is there's a lot of talk in this world about, in this game, about compensating for calls. I made a bad call here, so I have to make a bad call the other way. Or is sometimes that's the pressure of the fans, sometimes it's the pressure of a coach or a player yelling at you, but it does happen, doesn't it? Be honest.
They were two mistakes. And this is, I can understand it. It's difficult to understand, but I was not involved in the other foul from Mirotic. I think it was also the questionable call. Okay, but I was sure that something was happening in that situation with Larkin and Kuric, and. I brought a whistle and they did a mistake.
What about the incident in Panathinaikos, I think it was, with the attack on the car or whatever after the game? Are there moments like this, and I know we don't want to publicize that too much, but everybody knows that it happened and it's already out there. Are there moments like this did you have a heart attack at that time, or were you ill?
No. Luckily, no, because they were not able to broken immediately the glass or the window of the
that's a nervous situation.
We were able to cover ourselves, so nothing happened. I have to say that, you know, everywhere you can find these people.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, for sure, probably were fun from the game that were going on. For sure was deliberately, because right. They choose one part of the highway where there is no camera.
Oh, really?
This is something that police informal. Yes, so they knew what they do. But I don't think that they had something against us. But really, during the game, nobody complained. So we were completely, I'm not saying relaxed, but we don't, for us, it was something, you know, happened, boom, 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 and then the window exploded. And we were, you know, confused. What's going on? What's happened? Because the game was almost, flowing normal.
Any moments like that, or any moments in your career where you made that bad call, you couldn't sleep, or whatever, like you talk about. I mean, Larkin was obviously the last one of the last calls you made in the EuroLeague, anyways. But anything that made you just like, man, I got to get out of this, or this is too much for me, or I need to quit, or I want to move on. I mean, we all know when we're getting to the end of our career, but we all want to fight it also, because if you enjoy what you're doing, I think what you said earlier, I wanted to bring up too about that is, I feel like when the passion goes away for something, that's the time, like you said, when you're not nervous anymore because there's that passion. But was there times where you felt like that passion was dwindling away and you were ready to step away during your career?
No, I told you it's we have at every game we have mistakes. So we for sure when you have this call on Larkin, you have to think about more and more because it was a big mistake, I have to say, and it also was probably was affecting the result of the game, probably. No, before I never thought that one call or one bad game could make me retire for that. No, never.
Now let me, because you've mentioned the Larkin foul so often, and you're obviously still a little bit bugged by it. You know, I could see that in you. You know, after you make a bad call, if the result goes the opposite way of that bad or affects that bad call, does it affect you that much more? It has to, right? Because I mean, you in your mind, you've kind of cost somebody a game. Or possibly cost somebody a game. There's a lot of things that happen at the end of a game. I mean, so many different things could go. You know, maybe the guy who comes in for Larkin in that spot hits a three-pointer and wins the game. So maybe you did the team a favor. But normally, it's the other.
Normally, it's the other, yes. Normally, it's the other. But also, you know, sometimes there are coaches that are, they make on purpose something. For example, they want to shake the team. And you have to disqualify them and then are able to win the game, for example, no? Really, I think that Barcelona won the game. But in my mind was that mistake for many times. And for me, it was no difference if they lose or win. Or, no, it was exactly what I always say to my colleagues. I mean, if you are not sure, don't blow the whistle. Yeah. Like in that situation, I was not no. I cannot say that I was not sure. I told you from my position that was wrong. I saw something, and Kuric was lose the balance, and I thought that I didn't see that Larkin hit him. Okay, but I didn't have the right angle, so it's. Was a bad call.
Now that you're on the other side of the referee, and you're Richard Stokes now in Italy. In Italy. What consequences does it have for a referee to make a bad call? I think what you said before is probably more evident in this situation. Like, okay, one thing is somebody's made a bad call or had a bad game, but if you see repeated mistakes over and over again, and you're not changing those mistakes, that person's not changing them. What type of consequences does a referee have? Are they fined? Do they go down a level? Is there, you know, how does that work?
Okay, we don't have fine in our bylaw. I mean, but for because you know, we can say, okay, this is a bad call. Decide the game, the results is, for example, the last shot of the game and we miss the foul. And it's so we usually let the referee out one round.
You take them out a game?
Yes.
Isn't that essentially being fined? Do you get paid per game or do you get paid like a salary?
You know, practically it's a fine because we receive money only if we officiate.
If you officiate the game, right.
If you don't officiate, it's you don't receive the money. Okay. So it's not written, but it's kind of fine.
It's not an economical fine where you pay me X amount of money because you made a bad play, but we take a game away from you or two games and...
Yeah, it's the same. But okay, must be one clear mistake that decide the game. Because usually we have the evaluation, and you, as you said, you can go down on the ranking. That means that if you are continue to make the mistakes and you go down on the ranking, probably you are out from Final 8 of Italy Cup or from playoffs or from the, because you know, usually for the quarterfinals, usually we take 20, 22 referees. But then for semifinals, we take 14. And for the final, we take 10, for example.
Is that based on ranking for the season or for thy career?
For the season.
For the season. So each season's different.
Yes.
So that means you guys have to be on the top of your game every year.
Every year, yes. We have to try to find some motivation.
Right.
So the motivation is if you are working well, you get the games. And so if you are working well in the during the season, you will have playoffs. Then if you're working well in the quarterfinals, you will get also semifinal. And if you will work good in semifinal, you are one of the 10 that will officiate the final. And now in Italy, the final is best of 7. So at least we have 12 referees.
Right.
But Marco Gianzanti can decide because he's making nomination. His job also. He can decide to take only 10. It means that for the 4 games, he has to take 2 referees that are very good in the final and have more games. So this is a kind of rewards for them.
Those missed games and those so-called, they're not fines, but they're missed games that because you made a bad call or a bad whatever. How many times did that happen to you in your career?
It's happened also in Euroleague sometimes, I have to say.
Really?
Yes.
Wow, that's amazing.
And you know, because such a way, the crew chief, it's more responsible than the others.
Right, of course.
So if you understand, so, but I think that is correct. I mean, the most important thing is that the referee, I mean, the group of the referee, they have to know in advance that one mistake like this, it is, can be...
Costly, yeah.
Costly, yes, can be one game or 2 games. It's up a lot.
Would you recommend, do you have kids?
No, I don't have kids.
You don't have kids.
I don't have kids.
Or nephews or whatever. I mean, would you recommend anybody for this job? We talked about 20-year-old kids.
For sure, yes.
Yeah.
For sure, yes. Because it's even if we will not reach the highest point, I think that officiating gave me a lot of good things in my life. I always say that I'm feeling a much better human being with officiating. Because I had the chance to visiting, for example, some country that probably I never, not even thinking about it. For example, I was in New Zealand, I was in China for the Olympic Games, I was in Argentina, I was in Las Vegas. But, you know, I met so many people, so different countries, so different culture. I mix all the things and I was curious at the beginning. So. I could be visiting a lot of cities. I had very, very good experience. But the most thing that I met so many, many good people in basketball and in officiating that I think that it's very regular things to do.
Well, hopefully, you know, I've enjoyed this interview. Hopefully someday we'll find each other somewhere. We'll sit down and have a bottle.
Okay, good.
All right, now, after all this nervousness, after all this stuff, now you got the EuroLeague test, so there's no turning off the thing.
For me, this is the worst one. I'm thinking for 1 week about this question.
Everybody says the same thing. That's the fun part about it.
The crossover test.
Look, so each question is worth ascending points. Question one is worth 10 points. Question two is worth 20 points, 3, 30, 4, 40, 5, 50. All right, so we go from there.
Wow.
They get harder as we go, so be ready. You ready? Here we go, question number one. What is the name of Maccabi Platika Tel Aviv's arena?
Minor? Oh, Minor?
You're on the right path.
Yeah, I know, but I know it is two names, but I don't remember. Minor means... Mitachki, something like this, I don't know.
Menor Mitachin Arena.
Okay, I think that I'm on good way to beat zero, okay.
Number two, worth 20 points. Who was the 2007 Final Four MVP?
Diamantidis.
There you go, 20 points, beautiful. But to me, I'm thinking like they should have asked you who refereed the Final Four game and you know, maybe it'd be a little easier for you.
Was Belosevic, Michana, and Amonica.
and La Monica. There you go. There you go. See, that was an easy question. All right, number three. I don't know, man. This one I can't believe they gave you, to be honest with you, but with 30 points. Who has the best three-point average per game this season as of today in Spain?
The best average?
Three-point average per game. Three-point makes.
Juric.
No, Marcus Howard from Baskonia.
Ah, okay.
And if you think that one was difficult, this one gets a little bit more complicated. Number four for 40 points. You're still kind of in the running, you know. You have a chance for 90 more still. So you're still in the running to win this.
Okay.
Here's question number four. Which five teams have won most games in a Final Four phase since the year 2000?
Final Four phase, you mean the Final Four?
The Final Four phase, and any game counts that you win. So if you lose the semifinal and win the third and fourth, it counts as a victory.
Okay, CSKA.
CSKA's number one with 16.
Panathinaikos?
With 9, that's number two.
Maccabi?
Maccabi also with 9.
Missing two, no?
You're missing two teams.
Olympiacos?
Oh, man.
No. Shit.
I'm telling you, I would have guessed the same thing. I would have guessed the same thing. The two most obvious ones are still there. I can't give you the points because you said Olympiacos.
Could be.
El Clásico.
Barcelona and Madrid?
Yeah. All four of those have 9 wins.
No, I could say, but okay, Madrid was one of the two. But anyway, Olympiacos, I thought. For Barcelona, I didn't.
I would have definitely thought Olympiacos.
So it's 40 points?
No, I can't
but
give.
But 3? 50. You can give me 50, okay?
Look at the Italian coming out in you. You want to negotiate everything.
Yes, always, always.
All right, number five with 50 points. Which coach was the oldest coach to debut in all of your league history since the year 2000?
At least you have to give me the nationality, because there are so many.
You know what, I will, because you don't have a chance to win anyway. He's American. One of the most famous coaches of all time in America.
In EuroLeague, you mean? EuroLeague.
He coached in EuroLeague for a season.
Yeah, I understand. No, because in Italy was also the guy, the Torino that was very famous. America.
Think green.
Oh, Rick Pitino.
There you go.
I'm sorry. I cannot take this point. It's too easy. When you told me the team, it was too easy.
I know. But that's because you had no chance of winning the overall contest. So I figured I'd give you a break with that one. But I like the fact that you want, of the 30 points, you want 10 for each one you named, you know, of the three teams you named. And now you're actually honest enough as an official, as ex-referee,
yeah,
to say.
Yeah, sure. I'm honest.
I don't deserve the last 50 points.
I'm honest. My goal was to not have 0, okay?
You're successful then.
After the second one was okay.
And listen, the thing I love about these interviews that I do with you guys, and of course this is my first one with the referee, is everything comes back full circle. And you said in the beginning of this interview that to be a good referee, you have to be honest.
Yeah, it's true, for sure.
I love it.
It is my philosophy.
I love it. Luigi, Mr. La Monica, Mr. Referee,
no,
whatever I want
Mr.
to call
La Monica,
you.
Mr. La Monica, Luigi, please. We have the same age. I'm sorry.
This has been extremely fascinating for me and eye-opening to have this conversation with you. I really appreciate, and us at Yearly, we really appreciate you taking the time to spend with us here at the Crossover. And man, I love it. I love it. It was a great interview. And
thank you.
I wasn't expecting it to be so insightful. And I wish I would have known a lot of this when I played. Then I would have left you guys alone most of the time.
But you played also in Italy, you see? Which season?
Caserta in 88, 89 with Oscar Schmidt. No, 87, 88.
Ooh, fantastic.
We had Oscar Schmidt, Gentili, Esposito, Sandro Dell'Agnello, Pietro Generali. Yeah, we had an amazing team.
Donadoni was playing there?
Donadoni was playing also, yep. Yep,
Donadoni. And Tanjevic was the coach, no?
No, Marcelletti, Franco Marcelletti.
Marcelletti, okay.
Yeah. And Piero Costa was the GM.
GM. Excellent. Excellent man. Excellent man. Excellent.
Luigi, thank you so much. And
thanks to you. Thanks
to
you.
If you're ever in Madrid, please look me up and I'll take you out for a nice bottle of red wine.
Super. Thank you very much.
Bye, Luigi. Thank you.
Ciao. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. If you like what you've heard, subscribe now so you don't miss an episode and leave us a review on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. You can also get in touch via Twitter and Instagram at EuroLeague using the hashtag ELCrossover or on Facebook at the EuroLeague.